In this story that Irene read earlier, the people of Israel, the people that God had chosen to be his special people, were not having a good time. Things had gone wrong. They had disobeyed God. They'd continued to disobey God, even when he pointed out the error of their ways. And God had punished them by sending a powerful nation against them, the nation of Babylon, and had taken them away into captivity. This happened in around 600 BC. And Daniel, the person that was writing this that Irene read to us, Daniel and some of his friends, along with a whole crowd of other people, were taken away from Jerusalem into the capital of Babylon. They were prisoners. We read about that in Daniel chapter 1. Here in Daniel chapter 9, it's about 60 years later. But the story is going on. Daniel, now an old man, well, oldish, has been, we think he's about 80. So, apologies, I know there are some people here who are well beyond that and doing wonderfully well. But at that time, he was an old man. He'd been reading the scriptures, part of what we now have as the Old Testament. And even though a long way away from home, a long way away from the temple, a long way away from where they were supposed to worship, he has found somehow the scriptures, the words that God had given to his people. And they were still important to him. They were giving him insights. It reminds me of a time when I was working in the IT industry, and I was asked to go to visit one of our customers in Ipswich, which, apologies to the people in Ipswich, is always a pain to get to from anywhere. But I went there, and I was trying to get some one of our new products working for them. And the problem is, I'd never actually seen this stuff before. But I thought I knew what I had to do. So I spent the afternoon with them and tried to get this thing working. And nothing I did worked. And it got to the point where we gave up and said, we'll come back tomorrow. And so I said, I'll get it working for you tomorrow. And so I went away to the hotel that I was staying in and decided to do something quite revolutionary. I thought I'd read the documentation that came with the product, which seemed like a plan. But, you know, there was hundreds of pages. And as I started to read this, I thought, hang on, that's how it's supposed to work. And I carry on reading, and all the questions I had, all the things I didn't know how to do, suddenly they fell into place. And I was able to go back the following morning and say, this is how it works, and this is what we need to do. And very quickly, it was working. I'm sure there's a lesson there somewhere. But what I found was that the manual that told you how things were supposed to work was useful. And here, in a much more important way, in a much more important setting, Daniel had found the same thing. That the words that God had given to his people were amazing. And it was basically saying, I know that you are in exile, but it's not going to last forever. Back in Deuteronomy, as God was speaking to his people, he said, look, I know that you're going to mess up, and I know that I'm going to have to punish you, but I will bring you back. I will restore you. And Jeremiah, one of the prophets of God, that God sent to his people just before they were taken away, Jeremiah, who said, you are going to go into exile, you are going to go into captivity, had said, you will return. In Jeremiah 29, it says this, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you, I will fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. And this is what Daniel was reading. And he was saying, hang on, Jeremiah said it was going to be about 70 years, and we've been here for 60, 65 years, so the time must be getting close. How do you think he'd have felt at this point? He was somebody who'd been in captivity for all of his adult life. He was taken away when he was late teens, early 20s. And for the ensuing 60 years, he had been effectively a prisoner. He was living in a foreign culture with very different customs to his own people. A bit like those who choose to go and retire in the sun. They end up in a different place, in a different culture. But that's their choice. They've decided to do so and they work to make that happen. But sometimes being in a foreign culture can be a challenge. Again, when I was working in the IT industry, I was in France for a week. And we were doing some work there. And two friends and I thought we'd try and go out for a meal in the evening. So we got in a car and we drove to this very small village and we found this restaurant. And we went in and found that a number of things conspired against us. The menu was all in French, which is reasonable. The waitress spoke French, no English. We spoke English, but certainly not enough French to cope with ordering a meal. So we were reduced to pointing at things on the menu that looked interesting. And they brought us this food. And it was fine. We still don't know what we had, but it was strange. And then we got to the point where we were supposed to pay for the meal, and we got a credit card out, and we were pointed to this sign on the door, which we eventually got to understand was no credit cards accepted. And so there's this rather undignified sight of the three of us scrabbling through wallets to try and find enough francs, I think it was still francs at that time, to actually pay for this meal. And we managed it. But it was a difficult experience. We were in a country that was not our own, with different cultures, with different languages, with different ways of doing things. But again, it was our choice. For Daniel, he had no choice. He had to fit in. He had to conform. He was a prisoner. He had done well for himself. He'd risen to a senior position in their government. In Daniel 6, we read, Daniel distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. He was doing okay. Some people didn't like him. They got him thrown into the den of lions, but that's another story. So he had power, he had influence, but he was still a prisoner. His people were prisoners. His country, his hometown were in ruins. And now he gets these words from Jeremiah and sees that it's coming to an end. It isn't going to last forever. This is not how the story finishes. And so what does he do? He turns to God and he prays. What a wonderful reaction. He recognizes that even though everything would suggest that his people and his God had been defeated, he knows that God is still in control. That God has greater authority than this king, this emperor that he is serving. The king could not keep them there one day longer than God allowed. That's what Daniel was relying on. And he comes and prays, and he's serious about it. He pleaded with God in prayer and petition. He fasted. This was a way, particularly in Old Testament times, when people went without food or drink for a time. And it was normally associated with mourning, with recognizing that something was wrong, recognizing that they were grieving. It was a response to a disaster. And he wore sackcloth and ashes. It's a coarse black cloth made from goat's hair that's woven together with the burnt ashes of wood. Doesn't sound very comfortable. But that's what he was wearing. And again, it was a sign of mourning for a disaster. He knew something was wrong. He didn't want to ignore it, but he wanted to engage with it. He was going to pray. And he starts by reminding himself, by reminding God of God's greatness. And in this prayer, we see that God is great and awesome. Daniel recognizes that he is faithful to his promises to those who keep his commands. In verse 7, we're reminded that God is righteous. He does the right thing. In verse 9, he's merciful. He's forgiving. In verse 15, Jeremiah reminds God that he has done this sort of thing before, that when his people were in captivity in Egypt for 400 years, God brought them out. God rescued them. And what Jeremiah is saying to God is, look, you've done it before, and so that gives me confidence that you can do it again. And what Daniel is doing is recognizing how great God is. But he also recognizes the sins of the people that got them into this mess in the first place, and he owned them for himself. In verse 5, he recognizes that they have sinned and done wrong and been wicked and rebelled and turned away from God's laws. Verse 6, we didn't listen to the prophets. God had sent people to them and said, look, you are doing wrong. You are not obeying what I've told you to do. And if you carry on like this, there are going to be consequences. And Daniel's saying, you sent all these warnings and we didn't pay any attention. We're covered with shame. We get that time and again. We've been scattered. We've turned away. And so there's these two things going on. Daniel recognizes the greatness of God, and he recognizes the failings of the people. And one of the wonderful things about this prayer is that he doesn't blame God for what has happened. He recognizes that they were punished because they had sinned. In verse 12, he recognizes that God warned them that this would happen, and it did. This wasn't a shock. It was if you do this, this will happen, was what God said. They did this, and therefore it happened. And Daniel recognizes that. There is nothing in here of Daniel accusing God of not looking after them, of not caring for them, of not treating them right. Daniel recognizes that this was all as God had said would happen if they behaved in a certain way. So he doesn't blame God, but he does ask God to act. And he does this because of who God is. In verse 16, we find that acting to do what God has said would be consistent with who God is. He feels able to ask this because he knows that God is merciful. God will only stay angry for a time. And in verse 19, at the end of the passage that Irene read, he recognizes that the people being in exile is not only just shameful for them, but it brings shame to the name of God. When people who are in a group do things that are wrong, do things that are unhelpful, do things that people look at and say, well, that is not acceptable, it damages the group as a whole. We see this with some of the things that some politicians do, and people think, well, actually, that's not right. And so the entire party is sort of tarred with that same brush. And what Daniel is saying is, because we are your people and because we are in exile, other nations are able to look at us and say, well, your God was not big enough to keep you safe. And Daniel is praying and saying, look, you need to do this, God, because at the moment, it's affecting the way people think about you as well. So what do we see in Daniel's prayer? We see a man of faith. We see a man of deep commitment to God. We see a man who has studied Scripture, studied his Bible, and understood what it says in his context. We see a man who recognizes God's character. We see a man who recognizes the failings of his people, but is able to trust that God will do what is right and merciful. How does that relate to us today? The Hebrew people, the people that God had chosen, were unique. They are the only nation specifically chosen by God as his people. But the church, of which we are a part, is also a group of people chosen by God. So how can the church engage with the type of prayer that Daniel prayed? Some believers around the world are suffering the sort of things that Daniel was suffering. They are in prison. They are in exile. They're not allowed to go to their own country because of how they will be treated. But also, when we look back into the history of the church, we see that the church has done shameful things that does not honour God. We think of maybe the Crusades. We think of the Inquisition. We think of the way in which people were burnt at the stake for the things that they believed. Dark and sorrowful times in the history of the church. We see people even today who claim to be following God, but the way in which they engage with other people, the way in which they speak to other people is shameful. And sometimes people look at what is done by those who claim to follow God and say, well, if that's the God they follow, I don't want anything to do with it. And so the church today is in a similar situation in some contexts to the way in which the people of Israel were suffering. And because of that, because the church sometimes behaves in a way that is not very helpful, for many outside the church, the idea of God or faith is meaningless. I once happened to be listening to a radio program, and towards the end of the particular article that was being discussed, the presenter said this: I don't believe in God's existence. And the program carried on. And I thought, hang on, I have a problem with what I've just heard. Because this was a program on the BBC, and I thought, there are two issues, at least two issues with this. One is, the BBC is supposed to be impartial about many, many things. Is it appropriate that one of their presenters just makes that statement? And secondly, is it appropriate that that statement is made and there's no opportunity for somebody to engage with that and to respond to that and to say, well, why don't you believe that? And I was aware that thousands of people would have heard this statement. And I was concerned. So I decided to do something about it. I wrote to the BBC. The BBC complaints process is horrendous. But anyway, I wrote to the BBC and said, look, I'm not happy with what I've just heard. And what do you think about these two issues? And the response I got back, I find amazing. And they simply said that in what was said, there was no intention to be controversial or to offend. Well, I felt they'd failed. But, and I tried to continue that process and I got bogged down in the BBC bureaucracy, which is always great fun. But for many people, and sometimes because of how the church is, they think, well, there cannot be a God. And surely part of this is our failure to really communicate what it means to live in a loving and personal relationship with God. Daniel found promises that had been made about them returning from exile. Promises had been made about the church. Jesus says in Matthew 16, I will build my church and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. What do we know? Jesus will preserve his church. There are many, many reports that you read that says the church is in danger of dying out in the next generation. Jesus says, I will preserve my church. And that's a wonderful thing to hold on to. In Ephesians 5, Paul speaks about how Christ has loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Yes, we're messing up a few things now and again. But the end game is that we as God's people will be presented to him as spotless and blameless. Revelation 21. John speaks about seeing the holy city, the New Jerusalem, the church, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. The church, we will be presented to God as a glorious bride. These are some of the promises that we find that God will continue to do in his church. They're certain. They're sure. Whatever we may see going on around us. And that's a wonderful thing. Just as Daniel was able to see that the time of exile is going to come to an end, so we can see that God will keep his church safe, he will keep his church secure, even though it goes through times of difficulty. And the end of the story is written. God will eventually make everything right. But in the context of all of that, I think we, just as Daniel, are called to pray. To pray for the church here, the church in this country, the church in the world, that it will recognize, as Daniel did, the greatness and the holiness and the power of God. That recognizes when we sin and when we mess up. To see where, maybe, the church is being punished for not being faithful to God. To pray for God's mercy and blessing and forgiveness. To pray that God will continue to protect and to help us live in ways that bring honor to his name. This is what Daniel was prepared to do. And if we go on and read the story, we know that it happened, that God did act, that God did restore, God did send his people home. They were able to rebuild their nation. They were able to rebuild their city. They were able to rebuild the temple. They were able to come together to worship God again. Daniel's prayers were answered because God is a faithful God. So let's rejoice in what God is going to do among his people. But let's also recognize where things are not what they should be. And let's be prepared to really engage with God. Daniel pleaded with God in prayer and petition, in fasting, in sackcloth and ashes. Let's pray that God will be faithful to his words and restore his church so that we can bring honor to his name. With those thoughts in mind, let's come and pray.